Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. You know, today, truthfully, this is a show I'm looking forward to, and it's yet another episode with my dear friend Terry Hershey. Now, typically, Terry and I have a rather challenging philosophical issue to discuss, and it's always a blast to do that kind of show. But today may be a bit different, and maybe not. Depends on how we do it. It's a hybrid. I anticipate sort of a potpourri of catching up on stuff we haven't talked about for a while. First of all, as of about 2 hours ago, baseball is back, and my son has a job, so that's always nice. And then today, this morning, am I right, Terry? Did you spend the morning watching birds?
I did, indeed.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that. Before we get into that, though, I do want to get a little philosophical. And I read a quote this morning by the poet David White in a book that's titled Thoughts. He has me thinking deeply, and so I'll try to see if it reads out loud as well as it reads silently. And White writes this: in life, we are in the difficult act of disappearing, often against our wills, in order to make way for something we cannot yet comprehend. We must disappear in order to make way for something we cannot comprehend. Then he goes on to say, perhaps the ultimate form of human generosity is that of giving ourselves away and seeking what form we are given back. So in other words, you got to lose something in order to get something new. What do you think? Does that strike you as any? This is even before we're supposed to be officially on the show. I'm supposed to be doing intro, but does that strike you as interesting?
Yeah, not very easy, though.
Ah, good. I don't want to be easy. I'm asking our audience, what have you lost recently in order to make room for something to receive something new? And I've got a couple questions for you, but a note that I want to say just for our listeners that are catching us early enough, in just a few days, you will be at the, is it called the Religious Conference in Anaheim?
The Religious Education Congress in Anaheim, at the Anaheim Convention Center.
And Saturday, March 19th, you are giving a speech and
sponsored by the Archdiocese of Los Angeles.
Right.
Saturday morning, I'm giving a speech at 10 a.m. Yes.
At 10 o'clock. So I know you're early on the list, so it's good for people to get there early. And they can go to your website at terryhershey.com for more information about what time.
Yeah, or they can go to RE Congress.
Okay.
That'll do it too.
Okay.
But yeah, either one of those works. But yeah, it's 10 o'clock yet. It'll be good. We'll be in the arena, so there'll be plenty of space.
That's great. And you're bringing three brand new books, is that correct, Terry?
I know, I wrote all three. I'm bringing three new books because the last time we did this Congress was just 1 week before COVID.
Oh, so it's been two full years.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh. So I want to tell everybody to say hi because I'll be part of your sales force and tell them, come to me because I always cheat and give the best deals. If they don't have a couple of bucks, that's okay. That's enough. Terry can afford it. Yeah, I just got fired from the sales force.
No, the other women who are there who run the sales force, they just put Charlie to the side there, and he chats and listens to people, and he's basically the pastor there at the sales force.
The pastor, yeah. Yeah, that's me, the pastor.
That's actually accurate. That's true.
So anything new going on that we need to know about, that we need to tell our audience?
Are we talking about in the world or me personally? Because in the world, there's a lot new, yeah.
Well, not that everybody doesn't know about, though, but in the world.
Yeah.
We're
I mean, I get what you're... I mean, if you want... I mean, if we're just talking sports, I know that you're pretty addicted to baseball because of Austin, which is great. But if football fans out there, Russell Wilson, who was our quarterback for 11 years, is now gone. He's going to be with Denver.
No way.
Yeah, way.
Russell Wilson went to Denver. I thought that was the job that Aaron Rodgers was going to take.
No, because Green Bay offered Aaron Rodgers a whole lot of money.
Oh, that always
You know what?
Counts.
That's actually, that. Speaking of segues, you're talking about why do we lose something to get something back? We live in a culture where we just fill it with money so we don't have to lose anything.
Yeah, except our integrity.
Well, there is that. That's the conversation, yeah.
Yeah, because Denver has a good team. They just don't have a quarterback. I mean, Denver with a quarterback, Denver could be a winning team. It could be it's terrible for Seattle, but it could be a great move for Russell Wilson. What about Pete Carroll? Is he staying?
Yes, he is.
He is staying because I had heard the rumors that he might not stay. But let's get in. We'll get into sports in a bit because I don't know if your listeners understand what a sports enthusiast you are.
But I am a fan.
You are a fan of sport in general, and a big fan of football and baseball.
Both kinds of football, meaning.
Do you like European football?
Of course, because then it finally came to our country, and it's a big deal here because our Seattle Sounders are one of the best soccer teams in the United States.
Oh, that always helps. You know, when you know, there's nothing like winning to make you love a team.
Or the quality of play. There's nothing like the quality of play.
Well, if you understand the play, I still don't even understand what offsides is. So that tells you how much I know. Or is there offsides in soccer? There is. Isn't
well,
there?
It's an interesting thing about sports. When you watch a sport, like for example, I watch the game cricket, and I still don't understand the game cricket, even though I watch it.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever watched a game. I understand that was the way Vladimir Guerrero hit, was he liked to hit balls off the ground.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he was known for hitting balls off the ground. Well, let's get into our subject, and then we'll get into this fun stuff later.
All right.
Now,
ready.
So I thought you would be driving, and so you would have to multitask, but you don't have to multitask. You just have to think and talk right now. Is that right?
That's correct. I'm actually at my desk.
Oh, are you? No kidding. So, David White said something like, and I'm a big fan of David White. Are you? Do you like David White?
Yes. And you know he's Pacific Northwest. He lives up here.
No, I do not know that.
Yeah, David lives on Bainbridge Island, which is the island just north of Vashon Island. And so, yeah.
So you Seattle people are just, you know, you're like a freaking cult. You know, you just, if it's Seattle, we like it.
Yeah, and his vibe fits up here though too in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't read this book that I got this quote from Thoughts, but I've read my most recent David White book was a couple years ago was Consolations that I liked a lot. So anyway, so White says something like this, you got to get out of your own way so that fresh and expansive considerations can come to fruition. It's as if your brain and your life have limited hard drive capacity and you must make room for what Terry Hershey might call living in the present. So if there is so much clutter and so much crap and so many things going on in your mind that you don't get out of the way, you don't get to see the present, right?
You don't see it, and plus you can't receive it or embrace it. The point is, yeah, if you're mentally locked into who, and the most damning word is the word should. If you're mentally locked into who you should be or how you should be living or how you should be developing or what you should look like at this point. Once you're locked into that, that's all you see. No wonder you can't lose. You don't even want to lose that, which is crazy. That's the crazy part.
Yeah, and you know, and how does it sell, Terry? Because once we've mastered a handful of shoulds, we're still as messed up as we were before. I mean, when are we going to get that the shoulds are not really calls to the adventurous and soulful life.
Yeah. Well, you know what's interesting is that there are times when, as you know, when those moments happen and we embrace who we are, even in emptiness and or brokenness or something that's a reconfiguration of who we thought we'd be now. And we have that moment of peace, and it's pretty good. And gladness and receptivity and all of that.
Yeah, and I think that's exactly what White is trying to get to. You know, when he, you know, back to his quote that he said, we are in a difficult act of disappearing, often against our wills, in order to make way for something we cannot yet comprehend. We don't know what's coming. That's why I like your use of the present. We don't know. We're preparing for something. We don't know that what we're preparing for, but we're making space for it. And if we live these cluttered, busy, our mind made up, we have no room for the new and for the, you know, I love the word adventurous, for what is challenging and giving us purpose in our life. We don't have room unless we get out of the way.
Yeah, or even the simplicity of just the simplicity of not knowing in that moment of like that. Right before we came on, you asked what I was writing my thing about, and I was doing a story about Winnie the Pooh and Piglet go to Eeyore's house because he's sad and undone and has, you know, at the end of his rope, so to speak. And so they just sit with him, and Eeyore wants to know what, you know, he's expecting them to tell him something to figure it out. And they said, no, we're just here to be with you. In other words, they're making space. They're literally emptying the space of what, quote, should be done and said. Just empty the space. We don't know what's there yet. But by golly, if peace doesn't settle.
Yeah, you know, I see, you know, I'm sure there's multiple categories, but I see two categories that we can disappear from, that we can give ourselves peace from. And one is very tactical and very practical, and that is to declutter. Our lives are so busy and so filled with so much stuff that we haven't time to see anything or do anything. You know, I listened to it on tape of Cal Newport's book, Deep Work. And he has got me convinced that here's what I'm doing now. Emails, I do not look at an email before 10 in the morning, and I do not read an email after 6 at night. So, you know, I've sort of decluttered that part. I want to also, as we have talked about, I'm in the process of eliminating all social media, that I'm not on social media. They take up time. They're so addictive, and they take up time, and they clutter our lives, so we can't see the wonder of something in the present, wouldn't you say?
I would say, I would also say that that's actually one of the first choices to make, is what will you let go of before what? When people want to know what to do with or make of or choices in their life, it's always something that they should either add to their life or try, etc. In other words, it's an additional thing. And in fact, what you just said is, let's start here. First of all, let's, you know, my favorite story, I don't know if I've ever told it when I was talking to you, but you know, the famous, very successful, famous American sort of business person, but he realized he needed, wanted inner peace, right? So he decides to go over to Japan, go with a Buddhist monk priest, who's good. He said, who was famous for teaching about inner peace. He said, I want inner peace. And the priest said to him, okay, but before we do that, let's just have tea. And the guy said, what the hell? I don't want tea. I'm here for inner peace.
I want peace, unless there's drugs in the tea.
I don't want tea. So I said, well, He said, well, I'm sorry, but we have to do tea first. I said, okay. So he starts to pour tea into the guy's cup, and the monk priest keeps pouring, and the cup fills, and now the cup is overflowing. And the guy is just, the business guy, is just irate. What the hell? I came here for peace, and you don't even know how to pour tea. And the monk priest said, see, your life is just like that cup. It's already so full, there's no room for peace.
Yeah. Yeah,
so
I love that story.
So if you want peace, we're gonna have to empty it first.
Yeah, that's, you know, and it's funny, you know, I do titles to podcasts, and then I change them after we do the podcast. But the title I've given this show is "You've Got to Lose It First Before You Can Get It."
There you go. Gotta, that's it. Yeah.
You got to lose it. And
your cup is full, dude. Yeah.
It is, you know. And my closets are full. My office is a mess. You know, the feng shui artist, you know, Maria Kondo would come into my house and puke because I've got, you know, it looks, you know, some of the rooms, you've been to my house several times, and so some of the rooms, you know, look very neat, and I just say, don't go into a closet because, you know, that's where you see, that's where the inner part of me lives. But, you know, there's something more to it that I was getting at, something a little bit more, something more mindful than there is. There is that feng shui, declutter, simplicity. You know, we have these psychological sort of structures in our mind that prevent us. We've got to lose those in order to get something new. You know, Jesus, you got to lose your life to gain your life. You know, I put down a couple, so I'll get vulnerable, and I put down a couple that I have in the last year. I can't say I've been totally successful, but I'm much better than I ever thought. And one was the need to be right. I no longer feel, I'm no longer driven by this fear of not being right. And I think it's probably more a fear of not being right than it is a need of being right. I'm not sure which one. And the other is, and it's funny, I thought this is almost ironic, you know, that I'm doing a podcast and I'm saying the need to express my opinion in every conversation. There are times I am just valuing silence a whole lot more. Don't you think those are the kinds of things that we need to take a look at to say that we need to lose in order that we can gain whatever God or the universe has to offer us?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the point is, in other words, is whatever, what have I tied my identity to that if it's not there, I somehow feel like it affects my value? And if it really does impact me in that way, I've got to ask the question, why do I need this so much? It's just like people who have to be so angry and shout so much. Why? In other words, what is it I'm covering up with this need? And you need to be right. That's great because it helps us in our arguments, because when you argue with me, you're wrong most of the time anyway. So this makes this this actually gives me heart to know that you're okay with that.
Yeah. I think, you know, the odd thing is I think we actually agree on our president, which is really...
Yeah.
That's really kind of awkward.
The other odd thing is when we do fight, sometimes our fighting is we're not even deciding whether what's right or wrong per se. It's just we end up saying, oh well.
Yeah, kind of who cares what's going to go on. But, you know, Terry, I was thinking about you, and I was thinking about you. You are an enigma in that to your listeners, you give an appearance of being extraordinarily vulnerable and open, and that people know everything about your life, but you are probably maybe the most private person I know in life. That there are parts of you that do not go beyond Terry Hershey and perhaps Nancy. And would you not agree that that's true, that you're much more private than the public would think you are?
Yeah, for two reasons. One is I'm remarkably introverted, so that's just a part of who I am. is a part of sanity too, that a persona, you don't need your persona, public persona, to be who you are. So that is true, that's accurate. And then a lot of it is, a lot of people feel like they need to have their persona out there for people to think they're somebody. And, you know, that there was a time in my life when I needed that, Charlie, you know?
I know.
You know, the,
we were there together. When, we were doing the same
thing. Yeah, there was a
the
time when you
thing.
Wanted to, I wanted to fill that teacup with the wrong stuff.
Yeah.
That I don't need to do anymore, which is good.
But, you know, you mentioned something very surprising to me. This is, you know, I think it has something to do with what we're talking about, but it's certainly very surprising to me, and that our public persona somehow differs from our authentic self. I just use that. I interjected that phrase. Is that true?
100% true.
Is it? I mean, see, I would have never ever expected you to say that. So you've got to talk to me.
No, I'm just saying we live in a world where our public persona is considered more important than our authentic internal self.
Oh, you're not suggesting that's a way of living.
Yeah, I'm just saying that many people, you give in to that. You know, we assume that's who we are.
Do you find it getting easier not to be that way as you get older?
It's a weight. You let go of a weight. A weight is gone. Now you're back to your original quote. I let go of that weight.
So tell me this. Tell me what you learned, because there's one thing, and I hope I'm not getting too personal, but I'm going to do it. You had a prized possession. You had a beautiful house. You had, you know, a darn near perfect house for you. When you left that house, you had to give up a lot of shit, you know, a lot of really cool things. Has that left any room for you to be more expansive and learn and adapt and what verb am I looking for? We'll just say learn and adapt. Has that left any room for you, or is that a big hole?
Well, it hasn't affected me as I thought. I mean, there are parts of it that I miss terribly, of course. But
yeah.
Then you can't revisit it, so that doesn't go anywhere. But there are elements of, once you don't have, once the not having is there, I mean, there's something that goes on with, like, what you discover. Now you're almost back to the David Light thing. Is that, you know what? There are moments when I'll go, this isn't bad now.
Well, I mean, you have your things that you did before, but it's a whole different environment. You have your walks, you have your golf, you have a whole different kind of gardening.
The point is, you have to still make the choices to make your list at the beginning of the day, week, month, year. Tell me the choices you make that are going to nourish your spirit, your soul, and your heart. Tell me. And tell me how you honor them.
Where do I find those, Terry? I mean, I'm thinking to our people that are listening.
You know what? That's a great question. But what I tell people is, first of all, let's go backwards. Tell me things that happen when you have felt most nourished in your spirit, soul, or heart. And very often people will make a list of things that they answer that question, but they're unable to do them. So in other words, people will say, travel. In other words, it's something they can't do. You see what I'm saying? But some people will say reading a book, walking among the trees, listening to birds, talking with a friend. And what, there's a whole number of things. Or your thing, I mean, you're reading the mystics. I mean, that's an answer right there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a powerful answer. I'm thinking of looking up something really quickly on, bear with me, everybody, as I look up something online that I should have had up. Okay, so I've got this new instrument that I'm using that I'm giving out to people that, as I'm doing, I'm back into doing a little coaching now here and there. And I'm working with Martin Seligman's Positive Psychology. And there is a instrument, it's a character strengths report. And it's called a VIA Total 24, and there are 24 character qualities that they've identified, and they have you take this self-exam, sort of a self-assessment, and it determines your character strengths. I want to tell you, Terry, my 5, 6, 7, they go by the top five, but my 5, my 7, even 8 top qualities so nailed me that the idea of this instrument is, if you now, this is where people are feeling lack of purpose, lack of reason, lack of where do they find their joy in life. These character qualities, you live and you apply these character qualities in your daily life, you will have a damn good life. And there's 24 character qualities. It's free. I should make it available on the website so people can take it and find
yeah,
out.
Yeah, I'd love to see it.
Yeah. It's really, I'm embarrassed to even give mine, but you know, they just so fit. They just so fit who I am that if I apply, like for instance, I could say creativity, love of learning, and curiosity. Mm-hmm. If I'm applying those to what I'm doing during the day, I'm going to be content during that day. That is an authentic me, and that is going to bring this source, what we were talking about, where do you find contentment, that those will help me find contentment. Does that make sense?
100%. Well, yeah, you don't need to find it. You just need to receive it.
I'm silent because that's really good. You need to receive it. But
once you, if you're always looking for it, it's always somewhere
yeah.
else.
Yeah. If you're not careful, do you not run the risk of missing it? You know, you said you've got to see it, but what if you don't even know what it is?
Well, yeah, but that's the whole point of the first quote is, yeah, you run the risk of missing it all the time. Absolutely.
That is good. I'm liking that. I'm liking this idea of getting out of the way. And getting out of the way doesn't mean it's not a total dismissal of self. It's actually an attribution of self, and it's understanding the strengths of the self and how those interact with the environment.
Correct.
Okay, let's take a break, and we're going to come back and talk other stuff. You ready, Paul? I just shocked Paul. He wasn't ready. He was having a cigar. Hi there, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I'm talking with my dear friend Terry Hershey, and this was going to be a light and non-philosophical podcast, and this has turned out to be pretty philosophical. Terry, you'll never believe what Paul said to me at the break. He said, you know, what you guys were talking about, you said, how do you find it and accept it, but we don't even know what it is? So what, you guys haven't even defined it. It's just this thing out there. How would you respond to producer Paul on that one?
There's two parts of that answer. One is the relative to the quote you started, is the it had to do with myself, my authentic self, being at home in my own skin. So I'm grateful to be here now. So I just start with that. Am I grateful just to be here now? There's no it attached to that. Am I grateful to be here now? So there's, you start with that. And the other it has to do with what kind of achievement do I need to have some sort of sense that I am okay. I am enough.
Do you know how hard that is, Terry? Do you know how hard that is to say I am enough?
Yeah. And my response to that is so. I mean that. Okay, if we use that argument, then I should never stand in front of couples and tell them to take vows to be married to each other. I should just stare at them and say, "Do you know how hard this is going to be?"
you, got,
Do you guys have any idea what a ridiculous thing you're doing?
Decades and decades ago, before, you know, it was so popular for couples to live together, and they didn't live together, or at least they didn't admit it. And I used to open weddings saying, weddings are a time of great joy. It's the living together afterward that causes all the trouble.
You know, if you guys both died tomorrow, this would be awesome.
It'd be a great day.
That's the thing about it is, you've had moments, he's had moments. We've all had moments where this moment is enough. And you go, yes. You just say that internal yes. Yes.
If we're not careful, we make the it external. We make it, it turns into like what would be a should. We make it that this is what we ought to pursue. This is what we ought, rather than having something that's internal and consistent with our own private, secret, divine nature.
Absolutely.
Okay, we've talked a lot. We've talked about this one. I like this one, and I like this idea. Do you want to try to sum it up, or do you want me to try to sum it up?
I think you'll do a good job.
Yeah, I figured you'd cop out on me on that one, because I was trying to cop out on you. but because it's too difficult. But the idea is reducing. It's the Buddhist cup of tea, and that our cup is already so full that we need to shoot. We don't even need to drink it. We just need to throw it out and just start all over again. And accept as little as possible, and only that which matters. And I like, you know, I will, you know, I'm reminded, I will put this thing up on how you can get free. I think it's, yeah, I'm pretty sure it's free. And for $40, you can buy a doggone book that explains the whole thing. But there's a free one where it just gives your top free categories, your top categories. And that in itself can be helpful. And so we'll make that alive. So let's go. Let's go to, now we're just going to have, this is our, we're concluding with our, with a conversation that you and I would have, typically in our conversations, probably last about 3 minutes. Tell me about watching freaking birds. I do not get it. Do you actually see birds?
Well, the verb to watch implies a visual, yes. So this is
okay, smartass. I got it.
This is a wildlife refuge near Olympia. It's called Nisqually. That's because it's on the Nisqually Reservation Reserve.
Oh, Nisqually, not Misqually.
N-I-S.
Oh, okay, Nisqually. Okay.
Anyway, there's I don't know how many square miles it is, 20-some square miles, but it's where the Nisqually River hits the Puget Sound, so there's fresh water going in salt water, but it's this, they've left it as a wildlife refuge, and there's 250 different species of birds, 250, throughout the year, throughout a 12-month period.
How do they know to hang out at this place, that this place has been covered by any means, or is it just wild?
No, it's wild.
Well, how do the birds know that this is their place for people to come and watch them?
Well, number one, it's safe. And number two, these aren't the only places in the world where this happens. And because, number three, it hasn't been built up with a lot of buildings and people.
So it is a safe place.
It is literally a safe place.
So did you see today that gave you goose flesh?
We saw, because my son, it was my son and my stepdaughter, but, and then there's a list that you check off. We saw 29 species today, 29 different varieties today out of 250, which is pretty good. But
that sounds like a lot to me. Are you using binoculars?
Oh, of course, yeah. And he knows most of them, which is fun.
Oh, really? But, he's a what do you call a bird person?
A bird watcher.
No, there's this aviary kind of.
There's something. I want you to know when you go to this place, you're walking by people who have cameras with lenses on them that are worth a lot of money. It's a bird watching paradise, so there's no doubt about that. But you know, a lot of bald eagles up there. So just, I'm still enamored with them.
Really?
They're just sitting there, just hanging out.
Are they huge?
Yeah.
So how long do you spend watching birds?
A minimum of 2 hours. You can spend more, but yeah.
Oh my goodness.
We walked from one end of the refuge to the other end and back, and it was over 4 miles.
That's a pretty good walk, and you know, I mean, you're walking faster than I would have thought in 2 hours. You know, that's 30 minutes an hour. That means you're not stopped for a long time. You're walking quite a bit.
Parts of it we had to, because we had to get somewhere. I had to do a podcast.
At 3 o'clock?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's the thing about any refuge, any wildlife refuge, is exactly what we're talking about. What you notice is there's plenty of space. It's not full of crap. There's space. That's why there's so much life there. It's not undone with stuff and noise. It's just space.
What is it about space that is so important? And it's terrifying. See, my favorite place, I like deserts rather than mountains. I get claustrophobic in forests. Not necessarily, I mean, I'm not pathologically claustrophobic, but I just, you know, I feel the trees are in the way rather than in the desert. I just like the sun and, you know, and the openness of it and the hills in the distance. I like that. And so I really enjoy that kind of space. So I get the idea of space. I get the idea of space in a home of, as we've talked about, decluttering the home. But there's also those of us who are raised in the city, and that is anathema. Space is like a scary thing, is it not?
The science on this is unequivocal. In the cities that have the best mental health are the cities with the most parks. Hands down, without exception. In fact, in the cities who spend time doing that, making space, that's the payoff. Manhattan would not be Manhattan without Central Park. It's just
right.
It's not even remotely possible.
Right.
As you know.
Right.
It's just not possible. And it was a big deal because when I went to university in London, so designing cities and space, empty space or park space, was a big deal in city design. That was fascinating to me, is how do you design the parks in the cities before you fill it up?
Boy, it all comes down, you know, we're just, you know, no matter what we're talking about, it just coming down to, you know, the word clutter keeps coming to my mind, but, you know, just filling that cup of tea, and that's even like a city. A city must have empty spots.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you know what I noticed in Southern California? This doesn't sound to be racist or ethnist or whatever, but you know who hangs out at the parks in Southern California?
No, don't.
The Hispanic people.
Yeah. Well, when you go, because you know I used to spend a lot of time in Guatemala.
Right.
Well, that's where you went. You went to the parks. That's where you go.
Yeah, and the fun, you can see the fun everybody is having and enjoying the parks.
Because there's a relational dynamic, too, which is a big deal.
Yeah, and it's a whole family. Everybody can get there. You'll see 25 people at around a couple of tables. And we don't do that. We just, you know, my wife and I will, part of our walk, we'll walk right by the park without going into the park or sitting or thinking or doing anything. We're on our objective of walking our mile, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's close out this, but I've got to talk to you about, since we're just hours away, hours post baseball, what are you thinking about all this? Are you glad baseball's playing? Are you?
Yeah, of course, I have no idea what happens when those negotiations take place between players and owners or whatever. And, you know, to someone like me who's just a fan, none of that makes sense. And I don't really kind of trust or believe anything they say.
Kind of sounds like politics.
That's unfortunate. That's the unfortunate part. I'm just ready to go to the game.
Yeah,
that's the deal. I'm just ready to go to the game. And so there is a little cynical part of me with that.
You know, let me make it a bit interesting for you. Do you realize, I don't think many people, they talk about this, it's millionaires versus billionaires. Well, it's not millionaires. The whole thing of this was about getting the younger players money, because the younger players are getting taken advantage of. You know, they're being paid so underpaid in their prime, and they're paid nothing compared to these guys that are over prime. Do you realize, and this came from one of your pitchers, I don't know his name, it's a relief pitcher that kind of, like, he was sort of like comeback pitcher of the year, one of your relief pitchers that was really good this year.
And
for
okay,
this, for
keep,
what's that?
Yeah, keep going. It'll come to me.
Okay. And he brought out the point that 46% of all the players in Major League Baseball earned less than $500,000 in 2021. Now, you're thinking they're all millionaires because you hear about the Fernando Tatis guys, you know, that are making $30 million a year. And that's all they talk about are the guys that are making 10 or 15 or 20 or 100 million. You know, there are those. But 46% made less than... Now, $500,000 is nothing to sneeze at. I mean, you and I take $500,000 in a minute. And that was what the whole thing was about, Terry, was about trying to gain equity for these younger players and try to get them out of such long arbitration and the ownership taking advantage of them. So that was what was...
I actually do know that because I follow it.
Yeah.
And I just think, I watch worldwide sports, and I mean, sports are actually bigger in other countries than they are here.
Oh, my goodness. My goodness.
In terms of the percentage of people that follow.
Oh.
And it's a remarkable thing what happens to cities when sports is able to do something that politics never can.
Oh. There's nothing like winning. There's just nothing like winning. You have a sports team that wins, that city is, you know, look what happens to that city.
Yeah, I mean, just look what Cincinnati did. Yeah, Cincinnati, the last time they won, nobody could tweet about it because tweeting didn't exist.
yeah, and boy, did they come up. That was incredible. And you guys, and on baseball, you guys, the Mariners, you actually had a team last year, didn't you?
We just missed the playoffs.
Just missed the playoffs by the last couple of days, wasn't it?
We were in a division that had too many good teams anyway.
So who's all in your division? It's Oakland, the Angels. Who else is in that division?
Houston.
Oh, Houston's in that division. Yeah. Houston and Oakland are you know, they can put together a good baseball club. Yeah, and we even could have had a decent year had we not lost our number 1, 2, and 3 pitchers for the year. You know, you just can't lose 1, 2, and 3 and do anything. Even though we couldn't hit, we could play. But my son was charged. He just said he was beyond pumped. He's getting a truck. He's getting a Ford 150, and he's driving to Arizona tomorrow. Reporting day is Monday, but he wants to be there early. He's ready to start playing baseball.
I'm happy for him. I really am. I'm just telling you, I'm glad he bought a Ford 150, but with the price of gas, I would have bought a Prius. I'm just letting you know.
I just filled up my tank today for the first time. Do you know what my gas in California? Because I have to put my, I don't have to, but my car says it requires premium. Do you know, do you know how much I paid?
No.
It was either $6.16 or $6.61.
Yeah. See, people, you don't, you guys don't ever vacation in Europe.
Oh, I know, I know.
They've never had gas that cheap.
I know, I know.
Never. We're crazy. We're
$1.50 a liter. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, get a car that doesn't burn so much.
Well,
I mean, that's my deal.
I was going to get a Tesla, and then I backed off.
Yeah. Now we're talking.
Okay.
Let's do that on our next talk.
Well, that'll be our next talk, Hirsch. It's always great talking to you, buddy.
Thanks, Charles.
What are the? Is there anything we need to know about your new books?
It maybe? Just came out. It just arrived. Literally, it came to my doorstep while we were on the conversation.
What came to your doorstep?
Box of my new book.
Have they come to my doorstep yet?
They're coming tomorrow.
Oh, they're coming tomorrow.
Yeah, we changed it to tomorrow because I had to give them permission to deliver even if you weren't there. But yes, it's called Stand Still, Finding Balance When the World Turns Upside Down.
That's one book.
Yep.
Is that what you're going to lecture on?
Yeah, and so that's the talk I'll give on the 19th or whatever it is.
Yeah, at 10 o'clock I'll be there.
Mm-hmm.
Pastoring everybody and selling books on the cheap.
Yeah, good, look good.
Okay, my friend, it's been great having you on the show. Enjoy writing a blog. And I want to encourage everybody, if you live in the Southern California area, can they still get into the conference, into the Congress?
Yes. Uh-huh, they can.
Yeah. Go see Terry. It's if you've never heard him speak, you've missed out. Okay, buddy. So once again, that's going to be it for today. This is Charlie Hedge signing off. Bye for now.